Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
Today on the Matt Walsh Show, violent gangs have taken control of the country of Haiti. This is a very bad time for our borders to be wide open. We'll discuss also in one of the most insane moves we've seen from an insane president. President Biden apologized over the weekend for calling Laken Riley's killer illegal. Plus, Robert De Niro offers a terrifying dystopian vision of the future if Donald Trump is reelected. And thousands of kids called their congressional representatives last week, panicked over a bill that would supposedly ban TikTok, which only goes to show why we should ban TikTok. We'll talk about all that and more today on the Matt Walsh Show. When we say that something is free, it should mean precisely that. No strings attached, no hidden costs, and no fine print to decipher. When you switch to Pure Talk today, you'll get a free Samsung 5G smartphone. There is no four-line requirement, no activation fee, just a free Samsung that's built to last with a rugged screen, quick charging battery, and top-tier data security. Qualifying plans start at just $35 monthly for unlimited talk, text, 15 gigs of data, and a mobile hotspot. Pure Talk gives you phenomenal coverage on America's most dependable 5G network. It's the same coverage you know and love, but for half the price of the other guys. Pure Talk saves the average family almost $1,000 a year. Plus, with Pure Talk, you know you're spending your hard-earned money with a company that aligns with your values. Let Pure Talk's expert U.S. customer service team help you make the switch today. Go to puretalk.com/Walsh to claim eligibility for your free brand new Samsung 5G smartphone and start saving on wireless today. Again, go to puretalk.com/Walsh to switch to my cell phone plan, Pure Talk. Well, the news out of Haiti the past few weeks has not been very good. And this should come as no great surprise, as the news out of Haiti has not been very good for the past 200 years or so. It is, of course, one of the most miserable and destitute places in the world. 60% of the country lives below the poverty line. Average life expectancy is under 65. I could go on listing depressing statistics, but that's probably not necessary. And yet, somehow recently, life in Haiti has gotten even worse. The situation has sunk below Haiti's already extremely low baseline. If you lived in the country, you would right now be pining for the old days when you were merely miserable, starving, and destitute, because that was far better than what's happening now. What's happening now is that the Haitian government, to the extent that it ever existed, has collapsed. Violent gangs have taken over the country, are prowling the streets, executing people at random. The Washington Post describes the scene, quote, "On a ride through the gang-controlled streets of Haiti's capital on Friday, past an improvised barricade, the motorcycle taxi reached a crossroad. First came the smell of something burning, then the sight, a corpse, charred black, lying in the middle of the street, its bones and feet sticking out of a pile of ash. The night before, Jimmy Barsicott, a carpenter who lives nearby, heard two gunshots. Peering carefully out his window, checking his watch, it was 8:24 p.m., he saw two men drive away, leaving the body behind, not far from a university administration's office and one of Haiti's largest telecommunications companies. A few hours later, he said, the men returned and burned the remains. The streets of Port-au-Prince reek with the stench of the dead. It's a grisly new marker of the violence and dysfunction in this beleaguered Caribbean nation of 11 million people. In the absence of a functioning state, violent armed gangs have taken control of more than 80% of the capital, according to the United Nations. Gunfire crackles at all hours. Residents who dare leave their homes stumble across bodies that have been left where they fell. Port-au-Prince reached a high of 92 degrees on Friday. The smell of decaying corpses, human rights activists say, has driven some people from their homes." So it's a terrible picture, and it will only get worse. And it only gets worse the more you look. Consider the guy who has now seized control of the country, a notorious gang leader who goes by the moniker Barbecue, and who has launched a war against the remnants of the Haitian government while attacking prisons and freeing thousands of violent criminals in order to then recruit them into his gang. And if you're assuming that, you know, there must be some horrific reason why the Haitian warlord has been nicknamed Barbecue, you're right. That's exactly what you think. Reportedly, he earned the nickname due to his habit of setting people on fire. In fact, Barbecue has been basically the de facto leader of Haiti for a while now. And this is in spite of the fact that nearly a year and a half ago, the UN leveled sanctions on Barbecue. As NBC News reported at the time, it was a move that was supposed to bring about, quote, more peaceful days. Watch.
Now, the United Nations Security Council also weighing in, their eyes set on Jimmy Chedisier, also known as Barbecue, over the role his G9 gang has played in a blockade of Haiti's principal fuel terminal. A move that has dried up fuel supplies as the country already suffers from a water shortage due to a cholera outbreak that's putting 1.2 million children at risk.
Schools are closed, hospitals are closed, and farmers are having trouble bringing their goods to the market.
The United States stepping up and targeting those in support of gangs, leading to visa sanctions on 11 people so far. And China saying it supports the UN's plan to sanction gang leaders. A move that could perhaps be a step toward more peaceful days.
Well, that didn't work out, shockingly. The sternly worded letters to the third world gang leader named Barbecue somehow didn't have any noticeable effect. Barbecue did not listen to the UN's press conferences or read their letters and say, gee, you know what? These folks are right. I should stop brutalizing innocent people. And really thought of it like that. That was not his response, which no doubt came as a shock to the UN. And now things have gotten so bad that, according to reports circulating all over social media, the violent gangs terrorizing Haiti have even resorted to cannibalism. That's the thing about Haiti. If it's proven anything over the past couple centuries, it's proven that a bad situation can always get worse, and the worst situation can get even worse than that. Unfortunately for us here in the United States, Haiti is a violent, war-torn, failed state that happens to sit not very far from our own borders, which means that we have already been taking in thousands of illegal Haitian migrants every year, and those numbers are only going to go up. How many of the illegal Haitian migrants are members of the brutal gangs terrorizing their country? How many are escaped prisoners? Remember, again, the prisons have been emptied. How many of them are ending up in our country? And now we must even ask, apparently, how many are cannibals? These are questions that the Biden administration certainly won't concern itself with and hasn't concerned itself with. We'll be called to open our arms to the downtrodden Haitians, even if that means our arms will be chopped off and eaten for breakfast. But that's not the point we're focusing on right now. As important as the point is, there's something else that should be mentioned. Because instead, recent events in Haiti have prompted a bit of a trip down memory lane for some conservatives on social media who have reminded us about one of the many frivolous media-invented controversies of the first Trump administration. You may recall that way back in 2018, the left became outraged and deeply offended when it was reported that President Trump had referred to Haiti as a shithole, or crap hole, as I will call it, so that we don't have to keep bleeping it. According to reports at the time, Trump referred to Haiti and other third world countries as crap holes during a discussion with his advisors on immigration. And it was one of the many times when Trump reportedly said something that every normal American either has already said or would say. And certainly no normal person, if they heard someone in their everyday life call Haiti a crap hole, would respond with shock and horror. You know, they wouldn't say, well, how could you say that about Haiti? It's a wonderful place. That's not how any normal person would respond. But the media is not comprised of normal people, which is why there was a lengthy outrage cycle, which was over the top and histrionic, even by the left's current standards. The media proceeded to spend several days defending the beauty and majesty of the great nation of Haiti. There are many headlines like this from Mother Jones. Quote, despite it all, Haiti is still not a crap hole. And this from the Washington Post. This is how ignorant you have to be to call Haiti a crap hole. By the way, the title of the Washington Post article that I just read at the start of the monologue is Haitians shot dead in street and there's no one to take away the corpses. What a difference a few years make. I wonder, well, can we call Haiti a crap hole now, or would that still be ignorance, according to the Washington Post? But back to 2018, where this became a subject of discussion and condemnation, not just among the left-wing news outlets, but of course also on the late night alleged comedy shows as well. Here was, for example, Stephen Colbert registering his profound objections. Listen.
This afternoon, he was meeting with lawmakers to discuss immigration policy. Several of these lawmakers suggested lifting restrictions for immigrants from Haiti, El Salvador, and various African countries. Trump reportedly said, "Why are we having all these people from whole countries come here?" Wow. Sir, they're not whole countries. For one, Donald Trump isn't their president.
You got him. Yes, amen. Donald Trump isn't the president of Haiti. Instead, the de facto president of Haiti is a genocidal warlord named Barbecue. And he's so much better than Donald Trump. After all, Donald Trump will use vulgar language that hurts your feelings. Barbecue will hack you into pieces and throw your mangled body into a bonfire, which I'm sure we can all agree is greatly preferable to having our feelings hurt. But Colbert wasn't the only late-night host sticking up for Haiti. Conan O'Brien was on the case as well.
Meeting last week to discuss immigration policy. You all know President Trump referred to Haiti and African countries as whole countries. And a lot of people thought this was, it's a children's show here now. thought this was crude, disrespectful. A lot of people saying this is borderline racist, if not racist.
It's pretty racist.
Want me to lose borderline?
I think you can lose borderline.
I'm going to keep it in for now.
All right.
Anyway. According to witnesses at the meeting, the president singled out the country of Haiti, in particular saying, "Why do we need more Haitians? Take them out." That is apparently a quote. Now, I have no idea what the president has against the people of Haiti, but if the president doesn't like them, they must be lovely people. They really, I mean, it's just...
Hilarious jokes. I mean, such a long setup to get to the lamest punchline you can possibly imagine. But lovely people, absolutely lovely people, even the cannibals. They're the loveliest cannibals the world has ever seen. And Conan didn't stop there. He then embarked on a campaign to defend Haiti's reputation. It was a campaign that even had its own merchandise. Watch.
This past Saturday, we aired our Conan in Haiti special. And while we were in Haiti, we offered Haitians their own version of Make America Great Again hats. It's a hat that says Haiti is great already. We offered it to them, and they were quite happy to have it. People really like the slogan in Haiti. They liked it so much so that Omaze.com is now exclusively offering this Haiti is great already T-shirt to raise money for two amazing charities that help Haiti and the Haitian people, JPHRO and Artists for Peace and Justice. So go to Omaze.com/Haiti. To buy this great T-shirt and help out the people of Haiti. It really does make a difference.
Just imagine walking down the street with no context and seeing somebody wearing that shirt. Haiti is great. Haiti is great already. And, you know, just as a general rule here, if you can make a difference for a whole country by selling T-shirts, that's a pretty good indication that it is not, by any reasonable metric, a great country. A second general rule is this. If a country is a failed state stricken by mass poverty and run by criminal gangs led by a guy named Barbecue, it's not a great country. It's not a great country now. It wasn't a great country back then. Despite the claims of leftists who are so determined to oppose Donald Trump on every single point that they were even baited into pretending that Haiti is a utopian paradise, it is not. My dream is that if Trump wins in 2024, the first thing he'll do is declare that it's not a good idea to get into a rocket ship and fly directly into the sun so that maybe Stephen Colbert will try to prove him wrong on that point too. Oh yeah? You think the sun isn't a good place to visit? At least Donald Trump isn't president of the sun, Colbert will declare moments before being incinerated. Now, not to belabor a point that normal people don't need explained in the first place, but no, Haiti is not a great country. It's an awful country, an awful place. There's nothing great about it. Like, not now, not historically, just a terrible, terrible place. The word great in this context may have some ambiguity to it. People can define great in different ways, but at the most basic level, a great country is one where its people are generally able to thrive and prosper. Great can mean more than that, but it must mean at least that. It is incoherent to describe a country where almost nobody prospers as great. It is much more coherent to describe such a country as a crap hole. Indeed, you can usually detect the crap hole countries and distinguish them from the great countries because people from the crap hole countries are always trying to get into the great countries. It never goes the other way around. There has never been, ever, a flood of illegal immigrants from the U.S. going into Haiti. That has never happened. The flood has always gone the other way. And of course, that brings us back to the most important point in all of this. The end result, the self-fulfilling prophecy, we might say, which is that America becomes less great the more it allows unchecked immigration from the very not great countries. We are not a crap hole like Haiti, but import enough of Haiti into this country, and we might eventually get there. Then we will be the utopia that Stephen Colbert and Conan O'Brien dream of. Then maybe they'll wear America's Great Already hats and walk proudly down the street in that attire before they are descended upon by the cannibal hordes and promptly consumed. Because that's what greatness is to them, apparently. Now let's get to our five headlines. As you know, Easter is just around the corner. Instead of filling your child's Easter baskets with candy, consider Lux Blocks. My kids love all the different options Lux Blocks offers. They have spaceships, American flags, dinosaur cars, and everything else your kids can dream up to create. It's not just their innovative designs, but the story of their creators, Heather and Mike. They've invested their savings into this venture and their vision for a better future. Lux Blocks is made right here in America. They wanted to create something that positively empowered kids to think, create, and dream big. So whether you're looking for a gift for a child who loves to build or just a unique addition to your family game night, Lux Blocks is a perfect choice. You can check them out at luxblocks.com and use promo code MATT25 for 25% off. That's luxblocks.com. Use promo code MATT25 for 25% off. Well, you may recall that during the State of the Union address on Thursday, President Biden finally said the name of Laken Riley, the American woman who was killed by an illegal immigrant, except that he didn't actually say her name because he called her Lincoln Riley. This is one of those times when Biden's dementia, I think, kind of works in his favor because everybody just assumes that he botched the name because he's a senile, brain-damaged vegetable. But in reality, although he is a senile, brain-damaged vegetable, he also just doesn't care at all about this or about Laken Riley or about her family. And he can't be bothered to say her name correctly. So even if this was 20 years ago and he still had his mental faculties about him, it probably would have had the same result. There would have been the same flub. Well, Biden gave an interview to NBC on Saturday where he was asked about this moment. And he actually apologized. He did apologize. Except the only problem is that the apology was not for the way that he disrespected Laken Riley and her family. Instead, he apologized for disrespecting the killer. Listen.
I noticed the look of surprise on your face when you walked into the chamber and you saw Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. It was priceless. You feigned shock at seeing her. But during your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Laken Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing. We have to control the border and more orderly flow, but I don't share his view at all.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
So he regrets using the word. He regrets calling the illegal killer illegal, which, I mean, this is obviously deranged. It's morally atrocious. It's monstrous, psychotic. Many words to describe it. But I'm glad that Biden is going around saying this kind of stuff out loud, as horrifying as it is, because it's good that voters see it and hear it. And now it's just up to you as a voter to decide. Do you want a president who apologizes for using insulting language about a murderer? Not even insulting language, actually, just accurate language. It's neutral language. It's a description. Illegal immigrant is not even a value judgment. It is an accurate description of who they are and their status in this country. They're immigrants who came here illegally, hence illegal immigrant. But do you want a president who is, at any rate, principally concerned with the feelings of murderous scumbags who break into our country and kill our citizens? Is that what you want? I mean, with this sort of thing, Biden reveals himself to have priorities that just don't align with the vast majority of the country. I mean, I would venture a guess like 99% of the country. Because only the farthest left, most out of touch psychopaths will hear that an illegal immigrant killed an American woman and immediately think, oh, that's terrible. Don't call him illegal. That the number of people who actually think that way. Now, the number of people who pretend to think that way is even larger. But the number of people who really think that way is vanishingly small. It's a thought process shared by only the most extreme, most fringe, most lunatic elements of the far left. And the more that Biden advertises his loyalty to those elements, the better, as far as I'm concerned. One other point, it should be noted that, you know, the bit where he apologized to Lincoln Riley's murderer was not even the most deranged thing that he said in that 45-second clip. Somehow it got significantly worse in the, like, three-sentence span that we heard there, because he also claimed that illegal immigrants, like the guy who killed Lincoln Riley, built the country, which is not remotely true. It doesn't come close to anything resembling the truth. It is absolute nonsense. They did not build the country. They are not building the country. Illegal immigrants are not building anything. And one way you know that is, like, if you were to round up all the illegal immigrants and ship them out of the country, as we should do, things would not fall apart without them. Okay, we wouldn't look around and say, oh, you know, we're stuck. Now, quite the opposite, actually. And that's because they come here not to build the country, but to benefit from what has already been built. None of these people are coming here saying, oh, we want to help America. We want to help build America. None of them are saying, not a single one. They come to take advantage of the things that have been established without them, without their help. They don't come here to help. They come here to be helped. And you could tell that, by the way, because you can tell because it's obvious. But also, despite all the, you know, everything we hear about, oh, they build the country, when somebody like Donald Trump asks the question, why do we need more Haitians? You know, the left, they never respond by saying, well, here's why we need them. No, instead they get upset and they start crying about it. So which is it? Like, are they here to build the country, or are they here because it's our moral duty to offer assistance to the entire third world, you know, anyone from the third world who wants to come here? Which is it? Can't really be both. But, you know, when you phrase it as directly and bluntly as Trump did, this stuff about them building the country kind of fades away. Because they know the answer to the question, why do we need more Haitians? The answer is we don't. Like, obviously we don't, okay? You're not going to look around the country right now and look at any problem that we're facing and say, you know what would solve that problem? More immigrants from Haiti. No one's saying that. Name me one problem in this country that could be solved by importing, you know, 1,000 more Haitians. You can't. And that's the point that Donald Trump was making. And actually, that question, why do we need them? That is the question that every American leader should be asking themselves when it comes to immigration. Because the most important thing is our needs as America. And if you're an American political leader, you should be focused on what we need first. Not what Haiti needs, okay? Not what Guatemala needs, but what we need. And if there are people in Haiti who need us, but we don't need them, in this country that is, then that is the first consideration that has to be thought of. Because you're supposed to be a leader of our country. and you're supposed to have our needs first. I think, and that's all, again, pretty obvious, and it can't even be disputed, which is why what I just said about why do we need Haitians here, like even that will probably be clipped and it'll end up on Twitter or something and people will call me racist or whatever. But when that happens, which it will, I want you to go and look at the comments and you'll notice that nobody is going to actually try to answer the question. They didn't answer it when Trump asked it. If I repeat it, they're not going to answer it. They won't, because they know we don't need any Haitian immigrants in this country. So what they'll try to do is they'll go historic, right? They'll make the historical argument. And they'll say that, American and European pioneers, they were illegal immigrants and they built the country. Well, for one thing, you can't illegally migrate into a country that doesn't exist. And when they came here, the American and European settlers and pioneers, there was no country. This was an untamed wilderness dotted with warring primitive tribes who never established any country or civilization of their own. The pioneers didn't break the law coming here because there were no laws. And for another thing, when they came here, they did proceed to build civilization. They established through their own sweat and blood and toil the foundation of the world we live in today. That is not the case for modern illegals. They aren't building our civilization. They aren't establishing it. That's already happened. They aren't pioneers forging ahead into the great unknown to build a civilization from scratch. They would have no idea how to build a civilization. If they could, they'd stay in their own countries and build those countries. That's the other point here. Like the early pioneers and settlers in this country came from civilization, from a thriving and functioning civilization. They came here and they built a new one. Whereas now, the illegal immigrants and many of the legal ones come from decaying, dying, dead, non-existent civilizations without the skills to build a civilization. Because that's the whole reason why their country that they're leaving, that's the whole reason it has fallen apart, is because the people there don't know how to build a country and maintain it. They don't have those skills. If they did again, they would stay there and do it. And they flee their own nation because they'd rather come here than do the work of making their own countries prosperous, which, is just a factual observation. Do I understand it? Sure. I mean, if I lived in Haiti, I want to get the hell out of there too. But that's because if I lived in Haiti, I would be thinking primarily about my own needs and the needs of my family, which is understandable for me to have that as my top priority. But our country should not have my own personal needs as a priority over the needs of the country. So all this stuff about illegal immigrants are the backbone of our country. No. Again, if that was true, they'd be serving as the backbone of their own country. I mean, this country already has a backbone, and it's not them. And in fact, the more illegals that we bring here, they are a burden that we carry. They are a strain on the backbone. They are not the backbone. Okay, the Oscars were last night. Oppenheimer won everything, I guess, apparently. Actually, from what I could see, almost all the winners in the major categories were white males, it seems. So there's going to be hell to pay for that one. That's for sure. There was a major oversight over at the diversity committee for the Oscars. I don't know what happened, but we're going to have to clean house over there and start over. This cannot be allowed to stand. And I'm sure there will be many think pieces that probably have already been published in the coming days, making that very clear, that this is just totally unacceptable. But the other shocker of the night was that I guess they made it through nearly the entire show without anyone performatively denouncing Donald Trump. In fact, I think Trump, I didn't watch the show, but I think Trump was not mentioned at all. And they almost made it to the end with that unprecedented streak intact until Jimmy Kimmel, the host of the show, stepped in and put an end to it. Let's watch.
This doing this show is not about me. I appreciate you having me. It's really about you and Emma and all these great actors and actresses and filmmakers. But I was told we have like an extra minute, and I'm really proud of something. I was wondering if I could share it with you. I just got a review, and has there ever been a worse host than Jimmy Kimmel at the Oscars? His opening was that of a less than average person trying too hard to be something which he is not and never can be. Get rid of Kimmel and perhaps replace him with another washed up but cheap ABC talent, George Sloppenopoulos. He would make everybody on stage look bigger, stronger, and more glamorous. Blah, blah, blah. Make America great again. See if you can guess which former president just posted that on Truth Social. Anyone? No? Well, thank you, President Trump. Thank you for watching. I'm surprised you're still watching. Isn't it past your jail time?
Yep, had to get the Trump mention in there. It's sort of amazing that these people are this stupid. I mean, we're almost 10 years into the Trump political era, and they still have no clue how to oppose him. They come from the same world that Trump comes from, right? They're in the same business that Trump was in, and yet they're totally clueless about how he operates. Which, of course, that's a reflection of their own lack of self-awareness. Because if they had any self-awareness, then they would know how they operate, and then they would be able to extrapolate that, well, okay, Trump kind of operates the same way. He's from the same world. But they don't have any self-awareness. So because really, if they wanted to stick it to Donald Trump, right, if they wanted to land a blow, there's not much of a blow they could land at the Oscars, but to whatever extent that they could land one, the way to do it would be to just not mention him at all. Okay, to treat him as totally irrelevant and to have an entire Hollywood event that lasts for 7.5 hours, however long the Oscars were, and Donald Trump is not mentioned one time, not even alluded to, like he doesn't exist. Okay, if it's important to you, as Jimmy Kimmel or any of these people at the Oscars, if it's important to you to, you know, as I said, really. Get a hit on Trump, then that's what you would do. But they can't bring themselves to do that. They just can't. They have to talk about him. And speaking of which, Robert De Niro was on with Bill Maher the night before the Oscars, where he spent several minutes talking about the ways that Trump hurts his feelings. And that's not even my like sarcastic way of describing what Robert De Niro said. Those are almost exactly the words that he uses. Let's listen.
So why is Trump winning? I mean, the New York Times poll this week came out, and maybe this will change it with the State of the Union address, but Trump was beating him rather soundly. It was quite a warning light, 48-43, also winning way more among women than he had before, winning outright Latinos. What do you attribute that to?
I don't know. I just don't want to feel the way I did, and many of us don't. After the election in 2016, where we couldn't believe that it happened. The guy is a total monster. And anybody, I don't understand it. I guess they get behind that kind of logic. They want to with people, screw them, because they're unhappy about something. He's such a mean, nasty, hateful person. I'd never play him as an actor, because I can't see any good in him.
So it is interesting. He's asked for, although not surprising, he's asked for an analysis of, and I don't know why you'd care about Robert De Niro's analysis of anything political or anything at all, really, but he's asked for an analysis of, a political analysis of Donald Trump. Like the question was, why is he winning right now? He's gaining with women voters and so on. And De Niro says, his answer is, well, I don't know. I don't want to feel bad anymore. That was his actual answer. This is like a man in his 80s. And this is the maturity of his worldview. When you ask, well, why is this happening? I don't know. I just don't want to feel, it makes me feel bad and I don't like it. That's his answer. And then he goes on to say he can't see any good in Donald Trump. There's nothing good in him. He's a mean, hateful, nasty person. Where again, he's that is not even an analysis of Donald Trump, but it is, as he admits, it's a reflection of Robert De Niro's own feelings, just talking about his own feelings. And so it's no surprise that because he can't get out of his own feelings, and that's all he can talk about, that even as an opponent of Donald Trump, like he doesn't, it goes back to Jimmy Kimmel, he doesn't understand the effective ways or the potentially effective ways to criticize Donald Trump. There's this idea that, well, there's no effective line of attack on Trump. There's nothing that, well, it's like, you could criticize anybody, right? I mean, there's criticisms that land on anybody. But the problem is that these people are so dumb and they're so caught in their own egos that they can't see the obvious. And so here we are, 2024, so it's 2015 all over again, 2016 all over again. All they can do is talk about, he's so mean, he's such a mean person. It's like, and nobody cares about that. Everybody hears that. Like, there is no one who is going to not vote for Donald Trump on that basis, that they find him to be mean, right? Or very few people who will be motivated by that. Because most people hear that and they think either, okay, he's mean, I don't care. Like, what do I need? Why do I need him? What, I need him to be nice? I don't need him to be nice. Doesn't matter to me. They either think that, or they think, okay, good. Well, we need someone who's mean, who's in there, who's going to clean things up. So you're not hurting him. And if anything, you're helping him by describing him in those terms. And these people can't stop themselves. And he continues, and here he is going on to offer a dystopian view of the future under Donald Trump. And also, this dystopian view of the future requires us to forget the fact that Donald Trump was actually in office from 2016 to 2020. And so we can think back and we know how that went. But if we ignore that and pretend it never happened, here's what the future under Donald Trump will look like.
Nothing at all, nothing redeemable in him. And whoever the people are who want to vote for him, and there look like intelligent people around there, somebody, for some reason, it can't be. It cannot be. If he wins the election, you won't be on the show anymore. He'll come looking for me. There'll be things that happen that none of us can imagine. That's what happens in that kind of a dictatorship, which is what he says. Let's believe him. Take him at his word.
I did from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, I said from the very beginning, this guy is never going to concede power, and he still hasn't.
No.
He still hasn't. He just admitted he lost the last election, and he advertises that he will go on. He says he's been cheated out of one term, so maybe we should get rid of the only a president only gets two terms thing.
Okay, first of all, even if Trump was a violent warlord dictator, even if Trump was the second coming of barbecue, I don't think he would bother going after Robert De Niro. Like, nobody cares what Robert De Niro says. I don't even think that Trump does. But we see, again, the total cluelessness of these people. And this is not performance, by the way. I think that Robert De Niro really is worried that Trump will come into office and turn into a dictator who hunts down his political enemies and enacts retribution on them and all the rest of it. That could go either way. Maybe this is all melodrama. But I actually think he's that deluded. I think these people are that deluded and they really do believe it. Meanwhile, the reality is that Trump was and will probably be again the least dictatorial president we've had in decades, maybe ever. I mean, you can make an argument forever. This is the least dictatorial president we've ever had. In fact, as I've argued many times, Trump's greatest flaw is that he's too far over on the other end of the spectrum. There's like the dictator, you know, and then the opposite of that is like he's all the way at the opposite end, actually, too much so. Not that we want him to be a dictator, quote unquote, but his greatest flaw, in my mind, it was and is the unwillingness to wield the legal power that you have to advance your agenda forward. And that, you know, as I said, if they wanted to land a blow and make a criticism that might resonate with people, like maybe they'd go that direction. But they don't, because they lack the awareness and they lack the intelligence. And all they can do is just emote and talk about how mean he is and how much he hurts their feelings. Which fine, I guess is how we would summarize that. Okay. Briefly want to mention this. Daily Wire has this article, a controversial bill that would completely ban the, or could completely ban the Chinese-owned social media app TikTok from being downloaded in the U.S., is headed to the House floor after a congressional committee voted unanimously on Thursday to advance legislation. The bill, introduced by Mike Gallagher, passed the House Energy and Commerce Committee in a bipartisan vote of 50-0. The measure, titled the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Control Applications Act, would require ByteDance, TikTok's Chinese parent company, to divest the social media app or face an outright ban in the U.S. It would also create a process for the executive branch of the federal government to ban apps in the future that are deemed a national security risk. But there's a lot of opposition to this legislation. Trump is against it. Rand Paul has spoken out against it. Elon Musk is against it, I guess now. And I understand the arguments against it. And those are people that I obviously agree with on many things. But then I look at, you know, we know who else opposes this bill, and that is the thousands of TikTok addicts, many of them children, who called their congressional representatives last week frantically demanding that they block the bill. And the reason why all these kids were calling is because TikTok apparently sent a notice out to many of its users with announcing that TikTok was about to be banned, which isn't even really true, by the way, because, again, there's another piece of that bill attached to it, which is if they divest the company, then you know, if that doesn't happen, then the ban would take effect. But they don't explain all that. Instead, they just say it's going to be banned, and they urge their there was a link to their congressional representatives, and so a lot of people called. This led to thousands of calls to different members of Congress, and reportedly, in some of the calls, the kids threatened to kill themselves if this bill was not blocked. And that alone is the best argument I can think of for banning TikTok. The fact that kids in this country are so hooked on it, are so emotionally dependent on it, that you have kids threatening to take their own lives if it's taken away from them. Which means that those kids, TikTok is not what they need. They need a lot of help. But the last thing they need is more TikTok in their lives. So I'm still in favor of the bill. I think that, you know, there are two elements of it. One is that it is a Chinese spy app. So that's true. And I would think that's reason enough for lawmakers at least to act on it. But more importantly, this is something that is doing immense harm to millions of kids. And we talk about it all the time on this show, and it's one of those things that I think people kind of reflexively agree with, but they don't really stop to think about the implications. And that is that we have a generation of kids who don't know how to function without having their phone in their hand and constantly scrolling it. And kids who this is their whole life now, is just picking up their phone and staring at it and scrolling through, and that's their entire life. And you know, that part of the conversation, most people will agree with, because there's no denying it. And if I say, well, that's a big problem, most people say, well, yeah, of course it's a big problem. But I don't think we've really stopped to think about what this means. I don't think we've really stopped to think about what sort of people we are creating and what the world will look like in 50 years, 30, 20 years. You know, as more and more of these kids who've grown up on this, like the only thing they've ever known is just staring at their phone. And as they get older and become adults, I mean, we really could be looking at the total breakdown of society to the extent that it hasn't already broken down. When you've got people that can, they have no other functional skills. It's just that. They have no interests outside of that. And it is a crisis level problem without a question. And we should be looking at solutions. And sure, you could argue that, well, this particular bill isn't the solution for this and that reason. Maybe it's not, but you better have some idea of what the solution is. And the solution better be more than just, well, parents need to do better. Well, I agree parents should do better, but they're not. Okay, so the problem is persisting, and that means probably more action needs to be taken. And also, we are very much now in a world where you have parents who also grew up that way. This is the only thing they know how to do, is just be on their phone all the time. And so they're not even equipped to put these boundaries in place with their kids. They don't know how to put them in place with themselves. So this is a problem that needs a solution, and we should certainly be talking about it. Let's get to Was Walsh Wrong? Keeping windshields clean is always a pain, especially with all the rain we have been getting here in Nashville. That's why I'm so grateful to have Windshield Wow. Windshield Wow is an innovative windshield cleaning device that uses two magnetic cleaning paddles, one on the outside, one on the inside of your car, to clean both sides of your windshield all from the outside. Being able to clean both the front and the inside window at the same time is a game changer. I wish I had one of these years ago. Windshield Wow applies firm cleaning pressure, super thin to get into those tight dashboard areas. Seriously, all you got to do is push around the outside paddle, and the inside falls automatically, leaving your windshield squeaky clean. What's awesome about Windshield Wow is how easy it is to throw these in the back of your car. Think about how much we're in our cars every day, from daily commutes to road trips, bird droppings, tree sap, and more. Windshield Wow is always here to save the day. Washing your car windshield enhances visibility and also driving safety and helps preserve the integrity of your vehicle's glass and paintwork. It's a simple yet essential aspect of car maintenance that should not be overlooked. So what are you waiting for? Go to windshieldwow.com. Use code Walsh at checkout for a special discount. That's windshieldwow.com, code Walsh. Yeah, a few comments relating to some subjects we talked about last week. First one says, secession is an idea sold to disgruntled Americans to divide and conquer America. Madison and Hamilton explained in depth in the Federalist Papers, the explanatory publications of the Constitution they wrote, how destructive a separation of states would be compared contemporaneously to Europe and its centuries of bloodshed and suffering, as well as historically to Greece. A national divorce would permanently destroy the greatest country ever devised. Those on the right need to fight and never, ever surrender the idea of one nation under God. I largely agree with that. I think that, an actual secessionist, a real secessionist movement where you've got entire states leaving the Union and so forth, I think that there's a high likelihood that that could ultimately create a situation far worse than what we have now. That it won't really solve any of the problems that we have now, and it would only make them worse. I think that you're could very well be right about that. But we can say that. We can say it's a bad idea. Fine, but we also need to acknowledge that. The reason why these ideas are appealing to people now. That, to me, is the interesting question. And if it is such a bad idea, as you say, then why is it that we looked at the polls yesterday? I mean, the percentages are right, the millions of Americans are in favor of their state seceding. Why is that? That's the point. Another comment says, I don't think it's going to happen, Matt. I don't think it can happen. The hatred is there, not to mention the seething desire to create some racist paradise like the Confederacy was supposed to be. The difficulty is that the would-be secessionists need a host. Well, I don't agree that these people want a quote-unquote racist paradise, but I do agree with you that, I don't think it's actually going to happen. I've said this all along. I don't think there's actually going to be a civil war. I think that we are a more divided nation in many ways than we were in the lead up to the Civil War, but I don't think that there actually will be one for a lot of reasons. Some of it is the fact that our, you know, the cultural division is not as geographically well-defined as it was during the Civil War. So that's one reason. Another reason is just people, like we just talked about a minute ago with TikTok, people would rather sit around on their phones. Like, they don't want to give that sort of stuff up. The idea of actually like going out and fighting a battle over this is not really appealing to people. So I don't think there's going to be a civil war. I think more what we're going to see is the increasing breakdown of civil order across the country and pockets of chaos, much like we saw in 2020. I think we're going to see more and more of that. Not a encouraging vision of the future, but I think it's what's happening. Another comment says, regarding Christians drinking booze, the word miracle is not pronounced miracle. I know. You know what? Every time I use that word, people... I know. What do you think it's supposed to be pronounced? Miracle, right? This is... I refuse. And you should know by now that the more you try to correct my pronunciation on a particular word, the worse that pronunciation will get. So, you haven't seen anything yet if you think that the way I pronounce that word is wrong. Just keep bringing it up. It's just going to get worse and worse, I can guarantee you. Hi, Matt. The Hebrew word for wine in that time region was also used for grape juice. Do you really think our Lord offered alcohol, considering children/pregnant women were surely present, and it spoils the spiritual awareness of some adults? Common sense translation, grape juice. Really, that's the common sense translation? We're talking about the wedding at Cana. And the common sense translation is that it was grape juice. Now, yes, were there probably children and pregnant women at the event? Yes. But does that mean that they necessarily drank the wine? I mean, I've been to many weddings where they had alcoholic beverages, but you don't see, 10-year-old kids sitting there drinking. At least they certainly shouldn't be. So I never said that he offered the wine to kids, but it was alcoholic wine. So let's go back to that verse from the Gospel of John. Let me read a little bit. I mean, and you're saying, and there are many comments like this trying to correct me on this point, saying this was non-alcoholic. Yes, he provided wine, but it was just grape. It says wine, but it meant grape juice. Okay. And the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there, and both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, they have no wine. I'm reading from the King James. I don't usually like the King James translation, but I do like it for the Gospel of John in particular for some reason. So that's why I'm using it. Anyway, Jesus saith unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. His mother saith unto the servants, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. Skipping ahead just a few to get to the important part. And he saith unto them, draw out now and bear unto the governor of the feast, and they bear it. And saith unto him, every man at the beginning doth set forth good wine, and when men have well drunk, then that which is worse, but thou hast kept the good wine until now. Okay, so what do we get from that? He provides the wine, and the people at the party, at the wedding, say, well, wow, usually what happens is that you give the good wine first, and then you have the bad wine, because by the time why does that usually happen at parties? They're saying, well, because by the time people have had a lot of the wine, they're feeling pretty good, and then at that point you can bring out the crappy wine, and they're not going to notice because they're already drunk. That's like the implication, and so they're surprised here that the wine is so good. It's like, how have you saved that? This is the best wine that you've saved for like the end of the party. That's great. So, are they saying that about grape juice? So I wanted you to fit your common sense grape juice translation into that. That they're impressed that, oh, wow, usually at a party, people save the best grape juice for the end. You know when people have, they've consumed a lot of grape juice and they're feeling really good. And then usually that's when the bad grape juice is brought out. But you save the best grape juice for now. Now, when you read this verse, and you put grape juice in instead of wine, it makes no sense. Like, and also just the very fact that why would this be a crisis? Like, why is it a problem that you've run out of grape juice at a party? That's not a problem. Everybody knows at a party, you know, it could be a problem when you're at a party, especially at a wedding, and you run out of wine, you run out of alcohol. People say, well, we got to run out and get some more. That's usually the way it goes in modern times. You've never been to a party where someone says, hey, we've run out of juice. Where's all the juice? Guys, we need more juice. No, it's an issue because, you know, you're at a wine, you're at a wedding, you're celebrating, and you run out of wine. And I'm just trying to understand your common sense translation that this is grape juice they're referring to. You got high quality grape juice, low quality grape juice, people drunk on grape juice. Interesting. The iconic leftist tears tumbler is back. Everybody wants one, but there's only one way to get it, by becoming a Daily Wire Plus annual member. Not only does your annual membership give you unparalleled access to ad-free, uncensored shows from your favorite Daily Wire hosts, on-demand hit movies, series, and groundbreaking documentaries, but also it gives you our leftist tears tumbler. Soccer moms have their Stanleys, but you, well, you're raising the bar with the iconic leftist tears tumbler. New Daily Wire Plus insider annual members get a free tumbler, or put your money where your values are and join us on the front line in the fight to reshape culture with an all-access membership and get two leftist tears tumblers for free. Join now and get your free leftist tears tumbler at dailywireplus.com. Now let's get to our daily cancellation. It's hard to believe that St. Patrick's Day is almost here. Unfortunately, a lot of businesses have been down on their luck. Fortunately, if you're a business owner or hiring manager, you don't need luck to find top talent for your business. You need ZipRecruiter. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Walsh. ZipRecruiter's brilliant technology leads you to that pot of gold for top talent. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology shows you qualified candidate. And once you review your list of qualified candidates, you can easily invite your top choices to apply, so they'll likely apply sooner and you'll fill that role a whole lot faster. Aren't you curious to see how ZipRecruiter can help you? Well, today's your lucky day because you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Walsh. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Once again, just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Walsh. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Well, it's been a week since the release of damning internal documents and communications from the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, or WPATH. This is the organization that sets the standards of care, which are followed by major hospitals and gender clinics in this country. The files prove that WPATH understands very well that children cannot provide informed consent to sterilization and butchery, which they call gender-affirming care. In fact, at various points, the files make it clear that WPATH doctors themselves don't really understand the ramifications of what they're doing to children. The documents demonstrate, for example, that WPATH has long suspected that cross-sex hormones can cause serious and potentially fatal problems for some patients, including liver tumors. But WPATH kept pressing on anyway. They openly talked about performing surgery on 14-year-old girls and transitioning patients as young as 4 years old. Their only goal appears to be inducting as many children as possible into the gender cult, whatever the consequences may be. They are deranged activists posing as concerned physicians. In the past week, multiple media organizations, including New York Times, New York Post, Daily Signal, The Daily Wire, Telegraph, News Nation, have picked up the story. Even the far-left Guardian called the WPATH files disturbing. This is not simply a scandal. It's the single greatest betrayal you can imagine from an organization that purports to care about medicine. They are knowingly harming children. They are performing life-altering procedures that they know their patients cannot consent to. In another era, this was known as malpractice and battery. Now it's called gender-affirming care. And what's remarkable is that even as this story has blown up, WPATH hasn't directly addressed any of these allegations. They haven't even tried, really. Instead, on March 5th, WPATH's president put out a generic statement claiming that the organization is science-based and that the people who disagree are akin to flat earthers. That's it. They can't say anything more than that. They don't even try to deny that WPATH doctors talked about cross-sex hormones causing cancer, or the fact that kids can't consent to genital mutilation. And they can't deny that because it's all true. And it's right there. And we can look at the documents. We can see the videos. And at some level, that was expected. As my opening monologue laid out last Wednesday, WPATH has always been a scam. It was founded by perverts and degenerates. And even now, some of the most prominent speakers at WPATH conferences are eunuch fetishists. There will never be a moment when anyone can expect decency or honesty from any member of WPATH. The organization is, and always has been, irredeemably evil. And that's why it must be destroyed. Now, the same cannot really be said about the biggest hospitals in this country. You know, we do need hospitals. We don't need WPATH. But a functioning country needs good hospitals. And for a long time, we've had them. But over the past several years, many of these major hospitals have adopted WPATH's so-called standards of care wholesale, whether it's because they're motivated by profits or ideology or both. And I think it is both. These hospitals are now completely aligned with the quacks at WPATH, who have now been entirely exposed. So the question is, where have these hospitals been for the past, you know, almost week now, as this discussion has been happening? Why haven't they had any reaction whatsoever to the fact that WPATH, by its own admission, is knowingly harming children without their informed consent? I checked. I couldn't find a single example of a single medical institution or hospital responding to the revelations that we've heard over the past week. As of today, major hospitals are continuing to offshore all of their standards for gender-affirming care to WPATH. That includes places like Mass General, supposed to be one of the best hospitals in the world, which still says that it uses WPATH standards on its website. It also includes UCLA, which has proudly posted videos about how important WPATH is to their surgical teams. Here's just one of them, for example.
So some of the criteria for doing surgery kind of follows from the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. This is an international organization or association for health professionals. It was first founded in the United Kingdom under the Harry Benjamin Foundation. He was one of the first physicians and endocrinologists that treated patients with gender dysphoria. And soon this organization grew internationally into a big association where they're committed to ethical as well as safe treatment, healthcare treatment for transgender patients.
Now, you notice how the UCLA doctor mentions Dr. Harry Benjamin. What she doesn't say is that Harry Benjamin wrote a book called The Transsexual Phenomenon, in which he concedes that fake vaginas are wounds, that's a quote, that can be, quote, obliterated over time. For some reason, that quote didn't make it into this presentation on vaginoplasties. But WPATH's so-called guidelines are nevertheless very important at UCLA. As you saw on the slide, this surgeon won't see a patient unless these WPATH guidelines are met, which includes letters of support from medical professionals advocating for surgery. Now, as I demonstrated last year, that is not really a standard at all. One of our producers, you may recall, was able to get a letter from a nurse approving him for testicle removal after a 22-minute Zoom call. All you got to do is pay some trans clinic $50, and they'll approve you on the spot, basically. And now, a year later, we know beyond any shadow of a doubt that WPATH is aware of their own misconduct. They know that their standards are unscientific shams. They're just making all this up as they go. And the end result is always to push young people towards mutilation and sterilization. That's why the WPATH files are full of conversations like this one. Quote, you bring up some very interesting issues. At what age should transition begin? It's very difficult to ask that they wait until age 16. Waiting appears to increase the rate of suicide attempts. Unquote. That's a medical professional explaining that it's challenging to tell a child to wait until they're 16 to begin taking drugs and undergoing procedures that will potentially have lifelong effects. Apparently, this WPATH member thinks that if a 14-year-old threatens suicide, then you have to do what they're demanding, even though they have no idea what the consequences may be, and even though WPATH has admitted that they cannot really consent to it. Another WPATH member wrote, quote, I was curious to what degree providers discuss actual rates of surgical complications, e.g. pain, additional surgeries, necrotic tissue, infection, hematomas. I realize research on some of these complications may be limited. The files go on and on like that. Unlike WPATH's president, these WPATH members are basically admitting that they have no idea what they're doing. They're not accusing anyone else of being flat earthers. They're not remotely confident in this pseudoscience, and they admit it. And at other points, as I discussed last week, they effectively admit that children can't provide informed consent. Despite all this, UCLA hasn't said a word about the WPATH statement. Why might that be? Well, let's see. The doctor you saw in that clip I just played, whose name is Gladys, happens to be a WPATH member herself. And that's how thoroughly WPATH controls the surgical pipeline in this country. These quacks recruit ideologically aligned doctors. They create bogus standards, and then the doctors point to the standards and pretend that they're independent and robust, when in fact, it's a giant feedback loop. You know, these people themselves are in WPATH. They all have the wrong incentives. Instead of caring about the patients, their incentive is to keep the racket going so that the money keeps coming in. They don't think they owe any degree of transparency to their patients at all because they're not really in the business of healthcare anymore. This is a pattern in medicine that extends beyond transgenderism and WPATH. As Ben Shapiro reported last week on a show, major hospitals are now openly admitting that they're lowering their standards in the name of DEI. So here's one video he found. It's a senior surgeon at Duke named Vignesh Raman explaining that post-George Floyd, Duke has abandoned all kinds of metrics, quote unquote, when recruiting surgeons. Instead, Duke now has a completely holistic review process that focuses on the life stories of applicants who want to become surgeons. Watch.
2020 and George Floyd and those events happened and sort of collectively galvanized the consciousness of Duke University and certainly our department to try to do something, and recognizing this like centuries-long history of racism and slavery in which Duke University essentially was founded, on which it was founded. And that's when we sort of had to confront the history of the institution, the history of our department, the walls of white men that are draped across our hallways. And that's when we started to think that maybe something should change. Something should change within ourselves in who comprises this department, in terms of the faculty, in terms of the residents. Significant inequity in representation in our program. And it's something that we've been consciously, deliberately working hard to change over the last several years. Some of the things that we have done, in addition to what Lillian presented, I think the most important thing we've done is really systemic changes to our recruitment process to try to recruit diverse residents to our program, and then to retain and support those diverse residents after they get to our program. So part of this has involved transitioning to a completely holistic review process that we spoke about earlier today, abandoning, you know, all sort of metrics and screens, looking at people's life story and what brought them into surgery. And then the other part of it is increasing the diversity of the people who read the applications, right? Because that's an important component of ensuring that we get diverse residents into our program. And then once residents get here, how do we support them?
Because when you're going into surgery, that's what you want to know about your surgeon, right? Is what their life story is, you know? And there's a lot more that Ben found. That's just part of it. But the point is that nobody at Duke responded to this. The Daily Wire sent them multiple requests for comment or explanation. They ignored all of them. That's because at Duke Health, they don't care about what the public thinks. They're not really even concerned that much with patient safety. They're now an ideologically driven institution, just like every other company in the Fortune 500. Patient care is secondary to their political and ideological objectives. And it's not just limited to Duke. Ben also found that Wake Forest is about to graduate a student who bragged about injuring a conservative patient who mocked her pronoun pin, for example. Of course, if that medical student had bragged about injuring, say, a black patient because of his skin color, then she would have been expelled on the spot, not to mention arrested. Which she should be in either case. And the American College of Surgeons, which has about 90,000 members, recently put out a definition of racism that claims that it's impossible to be racist against white people, which is just classic critical race theory. This is what institutional capture looks like. There are institutions in society that are never supposed to become political or ideological. Hospitals are supposed to focus solely on improving the lives of their patients, not some trans dogma. But once that firewall is breached, once ideology is the dominant force in hospitals, then people start getting hurt. By embracing the cult of WPATH and all of its unscientific barbarism, hospitals have abandoned the principle of doing no harm. By remaining silent in the face of WPATH's admissions of guilt, hospitals have become guilty themselves. And if this continues, if they persist in hiding behind WPATH's fraudulent standards of care, then they too must be destroyed. The only alternative is sacrificing the well-being of future generations. And no society that wants to survive can ever tolerate that kind of outcome. Which is why WPATH and all the hospitals propping it up are today canceled. That'll do it for the show today. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Talk to you tomorrow. Godspeed.
John Bickley here, Daily Wire Editor-in-Chief. Wake up every morning with our show, Morning Wire, where we bring you all the news that you need to know in 15 minutes or less. Join me and my co-host, Georgia Howe, for daily coverage of all the biggest stories on Morning Wire.